Hi guys, Victoria here. Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to be sure you knew about the free online starter course we have available at the Victoria Stillwell Academy called Building Your Dog's Confidence. You can enroll for free anytime from anywhere. So whether you're looking for advice about your dog or you're wanting to test drive VSA before enrolling in one of our professional learning experiences, visit vsdogtrainingacademy.com now to get your free course. That's vsdogtrainingacademy.com. And now, onto the podcast. Welcome to the podcast, everybody. My guest today is Kamal Fernandez. And if you are lucky enough to live in the UK and to have watched the Dog Academy, you have seen Kamal work his absolute magic. We have a lot to talk about, Kamal. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome. Thank you for having me. You know, it's always good to catch up. You know, I'd say now we've escalated our relationship to friends. We've gone beyond acquaintances. This is now the second project we've worked on together. And it's always a pleasure. Yeah. Always a pleasure to talk to you. You know, you're an absolute gem. You know, I adore you. So yeah, always great to have these conversations.
Thank you. Well, I do feel the same about you. And yeah, doing the Dog Academy means that we have had that chance to spend a little bit more time together and go through the ups and downs of all of that. But Well, I've known about you for a long time. You've obviously spoken at the Dog Behavior Conference. I've known of your work, your great work. Across the board, and you're a leading light in the dog training world. But the first time I kind of got to know you a little bit more was doing the Sky TV show that we did with Oxford Scientific Films. What was it, in 2014? I forget.
I think it was 13.
Goodness me.
Oh my God.
Dogs Might Fly.
It was a while back. Before my daughter was born. So you're talking at least 8-9 years ago. Yeah.
Oh God, is she that old? She's seven. Oh, seven.
And we hadn't started. We'd filmed when I first met her mum, and that was like a year or so before. So you're talking like pushing 8 years ago now we did that. And ironically, this is how the world works. I now live about 15 minutes from where we filmed Dogs Might Fly. How weird is that? In the big house? Yeah, I live 15. Every once a month, I drove past it on Tuesday this week. I drive past that house every once a month because I do a monthly training day there, and it's just around the corner from that house. So every time I drive past there, I have a little trip down memory lane. Yeah, fun times. That was such a great
The concept of this show. Yeah. Oh my gosh, it was insane. So the concept of this whole show was that we went around the country and found 12 rescue dogs from different rescue organizations and shelters and brought them to this beautiful house in the middle of the countryside in gorgeous East Sussex. Mm-hmm. And there we took them through all these incredible cognitive processes, finding out about their skills and their talents and that. And three dogs made it to flight school. Mm-hmm. And actually all three dogs ended up flying a plane. Mm-hmm. That's what it was called. Dogs Might Fly. Yeah. It was basically seeing, are dogs smart enough to be able to fly a plane? Yeah. I mean, how insane is that?
Yeah.
It's actually really a show that was centered on discovering how dogs think and feel and learn.
Yeah.
And the kind of the plane thing at the end was just like, they are incredibly smart.
Yeah.
It wasn't a gimmick, but that was the sort of the end.
Yeah. And the big thing
and
for
it
me,
was amazing.
And the big thing for me about that show was it was really showing that, you know, one man's rubbish thrown away, you know, discarded dog for whatever reason could be an absolute gem. So that was the real beauty of that show. Obviously showing how amazing dogs are if given the right, put in the right environment and given the right information. But the greater messaging was, for me, it was about, taking these discarded rescue dogs that had, you know, some of them had been in kennels for quite a long time, and they, and taking them sort of, you know, this little, you know, nugget of, you know, dirt, and taking the dirt off and realizing underneath that there was actually a diamond in there. And I thought that was, for me, was the real beauty of that show. And just as a small bit of trivia, every single dog got homed to a member of the production team, or via this production team, wasn't it? Every single dog. I mean, that in itself, you go, the production team homed a lot of the dogs initially, and helped facilitate that. But the three dogs that flew the plane all went to, that Charlotte had Shadow, Reggie went to Mark, and Alfie went to Kath. So, you know, absolutely amazing, amazing, amazing story. Yeah. Yeah. So that's where we first met.
And the dog that ended up flying the plane was a beautiful Staffy mix, and his name was Shadow. And he, as I had understood it, I think he'd been rehomed a number of times, and he'd been in the shelter quite a long time and was an escape artist. He kept on escaping, kept on getting out. But this is the dog that ended up actually flying the plane. It is pretty insanely incredible when you watch it. You can see it on YouTube. You can see that end bit of where Shadow is flying that plane. And Shadow is now, he's a movie dog. Yeah. And he, Charlotte Wilde, who was one of the trainers on there, an incredible trainer, she adopted him. And the last time I saw Shadow, he was in a film with The Rock.
Yeah. Amazing. And I think the day that they picked him, the next day when they first went to select the dogs, I remember rightly, I think he was going to be put to sleep because he'd been in the kennel so long or something. It was a real, like, you know, okay, let's give this dog a punt. You've got Shadow, who's the dog, the escapologist. We can't, you know, he was one of however many millions of bull breeds that are languishing in kennels up and down the country. And yeah, it was an absolute, like, God, if you wanted to make a film about rags to riches, that would be the film to make, really. But a phenomenal story. But that's where really our paths crossed. Yeah. And that was such a huge production. It was like, what, 6 months of filming? More than that. It was probably about close to a year of filming, wasn't it? And then the prep beforehand. So obviously, you know, we had loads of time to sort of like hang out and get to know each other on a more of a personal level, really, rather than just, you know, as, you know, colleagues in this industry. And now look at us now on venturing onto the Dog Academy, another new project, really. You know, all these years later, we haven't aged a day.
Yeah, right. I totally have. And you look exactly the same. So, okay. So before we talk about the Dog Academy, I just want to learn a little bit more about your journey, because you used to be a police officer and then turned dog trainer. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got into this?
Yeah. So I always say that what I do now is definitely a life of passion. And I always, you know, certainly now as a parent, the greatest gift I think you can give at your child is to allow them to find their passion and then follow it. And I was able to do that more by sheer determination, because I grew up from a culture and a background, we didn't have dogs in it. So my parents are both, were both Muslim, well, both Muslim. And that isn't a faith that has a strong, has a culture of owning dogs in the way that I do now. So it wasn't like I had dogs in my periphery, or I had them in my family, but I had this overriding love of and passion for dogs. So I always say to people, you know, when my dad would put me to bed at night, I would get him to read me like dog breed books from the library. So it was a real driving force within me. So I did what most kids do. I wore my parents down and eventually got them to succumb to getting a dog. And that dog was the dog that really started this whole thing off. So she was a little, a Chow Chow cross, thing, you know, Hans 57. And she was, you know, we made every single mistake that a fledgling, inexperienced, ignorant dog owner will make, with a puppy. We made it 10 times over. And it really was her that I was passionate about dogs, and I actually saw agility happening at Crufts one year on the television on BBC Two. And I was like, and there was a kid that was running in agility, a guy actually called Greg Derrett. So if you're into dog sports, you know, Greg is a very, very successful agility handler, and he's a couple of years older than me. And I thought, and he had at the time, he was running a dog in the at Crufts, which was a crossbreed. So I always assumed, you know, Crufts was about pedigree dogs, etc. So I thought, well, how hard could it be? If he can do it, I can do it, because that's very much my mentality to life. You know, I'm very much a person that if I put my mind to something, I can achieve it. So I got this dog and I thought, right, I'm going to train her, and one day I'm going to get a dog to Crufts. I didn't necessarily think it was her, but I always thought I'm going to get a dog to Crufts. So I got her, and, you know, we made loads of errors, and she had loads of behavioral problems, which would now have a lot of probably sexy names to them. By the time, we just thought she was an unruly delinquent dog, and she was stubborn and she was difficult and etc. And looking back now, I think, bless her little heart, she endured a lot of really, really poor dog ownership, poor diet, poor exercise, poor everything. So we took her to our local dog club, and that really was where my love for training dogs really was started. And it's ironic, because the first night I went to class, and this is telling you how long ago it was, that it was the first lesson was how to fit a check chain on a dog. And I can still remember it now. You have your hand towards you and you put a P on that, and you make sure that the loop slides backwards and forth. And the first night I took part in the whole class, which lasted 45 minutes. And the first lesson was heel around the hall. So we walked in a distinct box. And when you got to a point where you turned, you checked the dog and you continued walking. And that was how my introduction to dog training started. But, you know, I loved the concept of it, and it was watching the other more advanced dogs that really inspired me to go, wow, I want that relationship with my dogs. So I then got more and more into dog training, dog behavior, and dog sports. And I was fortunate to have some success in dog sports. You know, I got a dog to Crufts, my second dog that I owned to Crufts, and he was a champion. I made him into an obedience champion. So I got very, very, very hooked on the concept of training dogs. And again, it's funny how life, you know, all the things in your life sort of drive you to a given point. So when I was doing my dog training as a hobby, and I actually wanted to be a dog trainer when I left school. But, you know, people around me said, you know, you need to go off and get some life experience, and, you know, you need to, you know, have more sort of, just more depth to who you are as a person. And I have to say, it was the best advice I ever had. So I decided, okay, I'm not going to, I worked in the kennels for a couple of years, and I worked with, I was training dogs at the kennels. I did residential training, and the kennels specifically had a lot of RSPCA seized dogs under the DDA and also cruelty cases. So it was a really great experience to have, because I was hands-on dogs. I'd obviously handled, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dogs up to that point. And then this was like an intense, I think about 18-month period where I was literally, you know, doing every job relating to care of dogs and welfare of dogs, from, you know, just husbandry stuff, you know, dealing with dogs that were, you know, traumatized, and, you know, puppy farm dogs, and the real, you know, in the trenches work, really. And so that was a really great experience. But I thought, you know, I didn't want to be a kennel person for my, you know, that wasn't my chosen path, really. I thought I would be a police officer. And I didn't ever want to be a dog handler in the police. That was a very distinct decision I made, because I wanted to have, I didn't want to have an overlap of my passion being my work at the time, but more the fact that I didn't want, you know, the dog isn't your property, so to speak. It's the police's property. And I didn't like that level of vulnerability. And also, to be honest, sending my dog into, you know, a situation that could end up, you know, where the dog was killed or something. So I definitely didn't want to do that. But I did lots of other stuff in the police, which, again, it's so weird how life works, and that it's all led me to where I am now, and also actually the dog academy. So I did lots of different jobs in the police, still parallel doing my dog training, and I was still sort of getting my name and, you know, competing in various dog sports and having, you know, some success. And I started to do seminars at that point, because people sort of recognized I had an aptitude or something. They wanted to hear what I had to say. And I then sort of had a bit of a epiphany where, you know, I'd done a lot of things within the police. One of the things that I really think there's so many parallels to dogs and dog behavior and problematic dogs is I work with young offenders. So there was a lot of parallels between the trajectory of somebody that has a younger person that has you know, got into trouble, so to speak, or have behavioral challenges, and that of dogs. And it's about how you rear them, how you treat them, the relationship you cultivate with them, and all those things really, really resonated with me. So I then, sort of, as I said, I had a bit of a, you know, do I want to be staying in the police? I always said I would do a minimum of 10 years. And I decided to sort of, for various reasons, it was the right timing, the right circumstances, I thought I'm going to become a professional dog trainer. And so, and this again is, you know, thinking about how the universe works. And I said this, I was telling somebody the other week about this. So I made the decision, I'm going to leave the police and I'm going to jump ship and I'm going to be a professional dog trainer. And I, what I had done is I sort of built up my business parallel. So effectively I almost had two jobs. And so I thought, right, I'm going to leave. And I wrote my resignation letter and had my meeting with my manager to submit the notice. And I'm typing an email, literally at the computer, I can visualize the office, typing the email to say, can I book an appointment to, I actually bottled it. I was going to pull out. So I was going to cancel the meeting that we had. I'm sitting down typing the email to say, forget the meeting. I'm going to stick it out. I had cold feet. I thought, oh, nobody's going to come to me. Da, da, da. And at the exact moment when I was going to hit send, my phone pinged and it was an email from Australia saying, oh, would you come over and teach in Australia for 6 weeks? And that was, to me, it was like a real universe moment saying, you know, trust the process.
Wow.
And yeah, it was literally the second I went and I could see my phone side pinged up and I went, oh, who's that email from? Boom. And that was it. And I thought, okay, it's a sign from above. And the rest, as they say, is history, Vic. You know, I've been so lucky in all the things that I've done. For example, like Dogs Might Fly, you know, obviously now the Dog Academy. I've trained dogs for television, media, obviously high level sports, you know, behavior cases, spoke at conferences. I've had a really, really, really very, very diverse career. And I you know how things just snowball, don't they? And you think, how the hell did this all happen? I look back at, you know, all the things that I've done, I've traveled the world talking to people about training dogs. And you think, how the hell did that happen? From a kid that started out not even being around dogs. It's, you know, and you think, well, that's something bigger than me as an individual, isn't it, really? You know?
That's why your story is just fascinating. And I do believe in signs. I do believe in things happening for a reason. And it obviously was telling you, yeah, you know, jump. Yeah. And, you know, you could start with this, then go to Australia for 6 weeks, do this, and pursue your passion. And you truly have pursued your passion. You do a lot, as you say, but, getting into dog sports, because that is quite a niche thing. Mm-hmm. Dog sports, and then as well, you've got your obedience, don't you? Yeah. So it seems like, you know, you are. That's why you're so good for the Dog Academy, because you're multi talented, and you've pursued a lot of avenues in the dog world. Can you tell me what it's like, that whole sporting dog world?
So, I mean, it is an eclectic mix of people. I say, you know, we're sort of a bit of like a family with a lot of different, you know, characters in it. And like with all things, you get a group of people in the room, they're going to be arguing about, you know, whatever. So you get that side of it. But I have to say, you know, my closest friends, the people that my daughter calls grandma and, you know, considers a family, are people that I met via dog sports. I've literally known people in dog sports longer than I haven't known them, if that makes sense. You know, I got into it when I was 9-10 years old, and I've known people for, you know, the majority of my life. You know, they have literally seen me go from being a child to an adult to having my own child. I mean, you imagine that, you know, that level of connection to people that you see once a week or, you know, a couple of times on the weekend. So the world of dog sports is very much about, you know, doing more with your dogs. And that, I think, was the original pull. And essentially seeing if my dog is better trained than your dog. So it does involve, obviously, a competition. I'm very fortunate in that I've had some success in dog sport and various dog sports. And I've also coached people and help them achieve their goals at sort of an elite level, sort of world championship level, crafts, etc. But it really has always been about cultivating the best relationship for that dog, which when you parallel that with something like the Dog Academy. It is always about the relationship. It's about the relationship between the dog and person. And the rosette, at the end of the day, merely is a representation of all the hard work and the ups and downs of what dog ownership is. So I'm very lucky in that I've had that as my foundation, because it means that from a training point of view, you have to have, you know, good mechanics, you have to have good timing, you have to have clear criteria, which are the pillars of which all effective training should be built. So I have that coming into the arena, so to speak. And the other thing, which is kind of ironic considering of what I do now, and certainly speaking on your podcast, is my background initially, as most of us was 30 plus years ago, was effectively a balanced trainer. And we used aversives, we used check chains. And I actually think that that was a really, ironically, a blessed path for me, because when you use compulsion and aversives, you have to be able to read dogs. Because if you misread dogs and you use an aversive, you are going to destroy that dog and ruin it. Now, you know that you also have to consider I was 9 years old with a check chain yanking it on the dog's head. So you have the ethics and morals about that. And I will openly say, you know, we were, the choices that were made were based more on ignorance as opposed to malicious intent, I would say, at that time. But when you know better, you do better. And for me, having that background really honed my ability to read dogs, to handle dogs, to understand their sensitivity, to understand how to read their nuances of behavior, to know that they went, you know, they're uncomfortable, they're stressed, et cetera, et cetera. And whilst I wouldn't want others to have that path into this world, it has actually served me, because I know both sides of the argument. So when people sort of present to me, the argument that aversives are effective or et cetera, I can push back and say, listen, I was there, I was doing it, and I can assure you the way to do it now is 100 times better and 100 times clearer. So I'm not saying, my points to make are not from a place of, I'm holier than thou. It's, I used to do that stuff. I know how to do it. I could probably, if I wanted to, do it tomorrow, but I choose not to, because this is a better, more effective way. Even if we took the moralities out of it, take that. Let's not make it about the emotive part of the discussion. It's just better. It's more efficient. It's clearer. It works quicker. I get better results and the dogs are happier. You go, why would I not?
If you mess it up as well, up, then it's not going to do, you know, it's not going to damage that dog, right? If your timing is not great, or if darn, I forgot to do this at this time, then you're not going to cause the dog a lot of emotional pain, right? Well, you just messed up. Absolutely. Whoops, here we go again.
Yeah. If I mistimed a check chain correction, I could do serious.
Oh, yeah, physical.
Physical damage. You know, I'm going to hurt the dog because I misread the situation, or because I'm feeling tired, or because I'm in a bad mood, or because of da, 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 da. And at the end of the day, you have to factor into methods the human aspect in it. You know, like if I'm tired, you know, my training is going to be sloppy, my timing is going to be out, mechanics is going to be poor. Fact. It's not because I'm doing it intentionally. I'm tired. I'm a human being. You know, if I've had too much caffeine, if I'm, you know, pressured, da, 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 those things take a role in the training process. If you then couple that with, you know, tools, you know, you're gonna there's a lot more fallout, put it that way, you know. And I know this, you know, this discussion, this conversation isn't about, you know, pros and cons. It's just saying my story is from, my journey has been from a place of change and growth. And also I also feel that I say it from with an open mind as well. If I genuinely thought there was a, you know, using, you know, a check chain was a humane, ethical way to train a dog, I would probably, if I'm honest, go, yeah, if that's the better way that's going to save the dog's life and the dog's is done humanely, yeah, why not? But I can tell you for a fact, you know, and we often with the, in days got, we look at the past with rose tinted spectacles, you know, but you know, I've had a very, 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 very fortunate career. I've been mentored by some phenomenal trainers who I now consider friends and peers. So, you know, yeah, I'm very lucky, very, very lucky.
I want to talk about the Dog Academy a bit more, some of the cases that people have already seen on there. And because, you know, yes, you're big in the sporting world, you, and I've seen you actually do competition at Crufts where you're doing your obedience, which is really, really impressive. The other talent you have is the behavioral stuff that you do, dealing with different behavior problems. That's what I'd like to talk about when we come back, but just going to take a quick break. A quick break here to get a word from this episode's sponsor, the Victoria Stillwell Academy. Now, did you know that I have a school that teaches people to be dog trainers? I love It's Me or the Dog and my work as a dog trainer on television, but those of you who know me know that my true passion really lies with helping other people live their best lives with the dogs. And I love seeing that truly magical transformation when that light bulb goes off with someone I'm helping with their dog. That's what it's all about. It's the secret sauce that pet professionals like me, who work with these amazing animals, that's what we all share. It's what makes being a dog trainer the most rewarding, enriching job I can imagine. It's why I love what I do. And it's also why I founded the Victoria Stillwell Academy, so that I could provide a roadmap to others who want to help dogs and the people who love them learn to do what they love doing at the highest level, that is to become professional dog trainers. Earning a living working with dogs professionally, it's been a dream of mine for years. And that passion is what drives all of us at VSA to create courses that are specially designed to help adult human learners chase their dreams. Now, most people already know about our flagship dog trainer course, which provides both online only and in-person options. Did you know that we also offer both dog guardians and future professionals a fully refundable 10-hour online course taught by me and other awesome VSA faculty, and it's called the Fundamentals of Dog Training and Behavior course. Now, I know it's not the sexiest name, but it's one of the most dynamic learning experiences available to dog geeks, and it's a pretty awesome first step to see if learning with VSA is right for you. Now, as a Positively Podcast listener, you can use promo code podcast right now to get the fundamentals course for 50% off. That is $150 value. So take our course. Plus, we also have a couple of free starter courses. They're free, completely free, including a course called Building Your Dog's Confidence, which reveals the secret ingredient to a happy dog life. So I encourage you to check out VSA today. As I said, we have courses for all levels of learners. So it doesn't matter whether you're a newbie with your first puppy or a grizzled vet already making a living as a pet professional, visit positively.com/VSA to learn more and enroll in a free course. That is positively.com/VSA. We all want the best for our dogs. Whether that means you taking home some key tips for your own dogs, or adding the ultimate in professional dog trainer education, visit positively.com/VSA today. VSA, it is the future of dog training. And now, back to the podcast. We're back with Kamal Fernandez talking all things dog. And yes, for those of you in the UK, you are lucky enough to see him on the Dog Academy. The Dog Academy, let's talk about that. So I think it's just a wonderful show. I'm very proud to be a part of it. And I'm very happy that you are a part of it too. And I think what has, again, just impressed me about you is not just your talent for training, it's the way you talk to people. Mm-hmm. And as this is already aired, I think we can talk about it. Mm-hmm. But for Cindy,
yes.
Cindy and yep. her Ooh. And Gina, her, mm-hmm. her Chihuahua.
Yeah.
Now, for people who haven't seen this, Cindy has a Rottweiler and a Chihuahua, and she brings both to the academy. And, you know, you don't know because all you see is the Rottweiler. You see her carrying a bag and all you see is a Rottweiler. And you think that that's the dog that's going to come that's got all the issues. But actually, when she gets into the reception room, she releases this little Chihuahua. It's not the Rottweiler has the issues. It's the Chihuahua that has the issues. And this is your case, you and Sean. And Gina's very, very reactive to mm-hmm. other dogs, mm-hmm. very reactive. And if she gets to another dog, she's likely to hang off its jowls. Definitely. I mean, she's that type of mm-hmm. dog. Mm-hmm. And you could say, yes, it's typical Chihuahua behavior, but, you know, we don't want that. Mm-hmm. So even when she's in a bag and she sees another dog, it's almost like the bag's exploding yeah. with this yeah. Chihuahua energy inside as she like growls and mm-hmm. just snarls at the other dog as it walks past. But you really tapped into something very important. Tell the viewers, well, the listeners and the viewers, like what you found, how dog behavior mirrors human behavior.
Absolutely, absolutely. So this is the blessing, and I think of my journey of being in law enforcement and working with people in situations and positions of vulnerability, and that really served me going into the dog academy. And when, you know, I was approached to by the production company to be part of it, I was very, I can remember distinctly when I did my audition or my my audition, I was very much like, I think this is a great show. And I said, if you show the human relationship or aspect into dog behavior and why we have problems in our dogs, I said that I could absolutely get on board with, because I think that's the conversation that isn't said or discussed or delved into enough. So specifically with Cindy and Gina, the background is that she was a really, really nice, really colourful character. She brought her son with her, very, very close relationship with her son, and she openly said he's the responsible one, she's the more of the wild child. And she openly sort of said that, you know, she was a little bit more volatile and she wouldn't take any. She had quite a tough upbringing and tough journey herself. So her defence mechanism was to, you know, get in there first. She wouldn't take any nonsense, da, 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 da. And as she's saying this and I'm exploring her own personality and her own story, you could see her stop. And which was what I was trying to do, is to go get her to make the connection between, you know, her dog and her own experience, because she used her vivacious, outgoing, you know, I'll take on the world personality as a mask for actually, you know, some deeper rooted stuff, shall we say. And effectively, that was what the dog was doing. And it was ironic that they both had the same story to tell, as it were. And when it was really, really powerful to see her have that realization of, say, of empathizing with her dog and going, wow, this dog isn't aggressive or mean or all the things that she had labeled the dog to be. This was a dog that was actually masking insecurities and fear and apprehension, which is exactly what the owner did. It was such a powerful experience to have. And obviously, you know, in the conversations that we had, not all of it was aired, because obviously from a you know, for various reasons, she was very, very, she allowed herself to be very vulnerable. And I came out of that, and I mean, Vic will back me in that, it was, I just needed a moment to sort of pull myself together, because I'm like, Jesus, like, you know, I'm a dog trainer, and I'm not uncomfortable with that type of situation given my background. But I was like, wow, that person has invited me to very, very private parts of her existence. And what a privileged role we have, where via the medium of their dog, they are sharing and dealing with their stuff. And that for me was the beauty of the Dog Academy. And I think we've done that with all of the cases. We've really tried to explore the human relationship and the fact that often it isn't necessarily the dog has a problem. It's our stuff that's coming to the fore and it's manifesting itself in the dog's behavior. And that isn't to say, you know, most people don't even know they're doing it. It's not that they've set out to create a problem or to have a problem dog. It's just that dogs are, like I always say, dogs are programmed to attach themselves to our emotional Wi-Fi. That's what they are meant to do. They are meant to feel the vibration of a room. They are meant to sink into your facial expression, your body language, your emotional thermometer, so to speak. That's what dogs are hardwired to do. So when you have a dog exhibiting a problem, first thing is to recognize that they could well be picking up on stuff from you. unintentionally or intentionally, and to start to work on whatever it is that is the underlying current that is causing the problem. But yeah, it was, I think all of us had some really, really, really challenging, not the behavior of the dogs. The dogs were actually, the dog's behavior, I would say, was standard dog behavior that we probably deal with on a regular basis. It was the human aspect that was like, whoa, this is, right, I just need a second to just gather my thoughts. I think it was quite heavy, some of the conversations, weren't they?
That's what I tell people when they want to be trainers. I'm like, just know that, and I experienced this myself when I started out training. You know, I would go into homes and I'd be sitting there having a cup of tea with somebody just pouring out their problems. And I'm like, what, I'm just here to train your dog. But I did find out very quickly that it's almost like this release. And our job is to find out why the dog is behaving in the way it is. And of course, they're picking up a lot of stuff from the environment, the situation they're living in. Mm-hmm. So of course, they're affected by human behavior and vice versa. But I think the best line of the show, and I don't know if I've got this word for word, the best line of the show is sometimes you don't get the dog you want. Sometimes you don't get the dog you want, you get the dog you need.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then that was just like, oh my gosh, that's it. So with Gina being all reactive and then Cindy being a reactive actually then her seeing that actually that baby's being mirrored and that she's just as vulnerable as Gina's not being the big I am. In fact, Gina's very vulnerable and that's why she's behaving in that way. And that's the same with Cindy. I mean, it's just, we can call it, yes, it's TV gold. You could say it in production that is, but for us as trainers, it's kind of what we do all the time.
Absolutely.
And
the
ability to be able to show that to the general public, this is our job. This is what dog training is all about. Don't think we're just teaching dogs to sit, stay and come when called, because this is the job. And this is how your behavior influences your dog. That's why the Dog Academy is absolute gold.
Absolutely. I mean, given the various things which I've already just said as part of my journey and how I see the universe and the world, I genuinely believe that you get the dog that you were intended to have because it's there to allow you to heal from whatever fill in the blank that you have experienced. I absolutely solemnly believe that with the bottom of my heart. I think that they're there for a reason. And, you know, you always see this, and especially like, for example, this is the thing about being in dog sports. You see people for obviously 30 years, you see them with several dogs and you see them consistently produce and all have the same challenges or same issues. And then you sort of go, oh, why is that? Now you could look at it from a training point of view and go, oh yeah, it's because they always do that in that manner, or they always train using that approach or blah, 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 blah. They consistently produce the same result because people are creatures of habit. And when you take that to a domestic situation, which I deal with a lot of just people that are in various states of disrepair, or their relationship with their dog is in various states of disrepair, and they come to me because they are, you know, at their wit's end. You know, a lot of the cases that I deal with now, there's a lot of really good trainers where I live, and they tend to pass them to me because they know, okay, this is a bit above my area of expertise, and I'm comfortable dealing with a lot of aggression, a lot of reactivity, a lot of dogs that they say, you know, last chance saloon. And when you actually scratch beneath the surface, you actually go, the solution is not within the dog. There might be dog training to be done, but the primary thing I offer them to look at is their role, their anxiety, their apprehensions, their fear, and how that manifests itself within the dog. So, you know, and I think the beauty of the Dog Academy and why I agreed to be part of it was because, exactly as you said, it gives people an opportunity to have a fly in the wall experience of what we do. And I think often, you know, dog training as an industry is looked at as almost like, oh yeah, that dog training thing, you know, you do the puppy class, teach it to sit down, great, yeah, whatever. And I think if people understood how many layers there are to our job, hopefully they would have more empathy. You know, we're counselors, we're motivators, we're sometimes the disciplinarian, we're sometimes the coach, we're the educator, we're the teacher, we're the carer, we're with all the things, you know. And I think it's such a multifaceted job that there is so many people out there doing brilliant work. you know, so many people in our industry. And this was an opportunity to show also for me what could be done in a relatively short space of time in very, very challenging circumstances with reinforcement-based dog training. And that, for me, was another thing why I wanted to be part of it. Because, you know, in the day of social media and salacious television and salacious viewing, there's a lot of stuff out there that appears to be, yeah, crash, bang, wallet, boom, dump, dump, bum, wow. And you go, yeah, but I could do that. Just give me the platform to show you that I can. And I hope that I think that in the thing that come across is that we all managed to do that with I mean, Bear, look at Bear that you and Adam dealt with. I mean, that was an absolute nightmare case. Like, if you turned up to that and, you know, it's that people's home, you'd be thinking, Jesus wept, what the hell am I going to do with this dog? But then it's about unpicking those layers, you know, and getting them to open up and getting them to be vulnerable. I mean, shout out to the trainers on the dog academy, obviously Vic, Adam, Sean, Joe, Nancy, Sean, you know, amazing, 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 amazing people and absolute joy to work with, you know?
It is, it's very, very hard if people kind of see it and go, oh, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly difficult. And obviously there's a lot that goes in before we get on camera and, but you know, like anything, that when we meet the dogs for the first time, that is when we meet the dogs for the first time. Yeah. We know a little bit about their story. Yeah. We've seen a bit of footage. We've had a behavior questionnaire. You know, they've had their vet check. But we're seeing and meeting the people for the first time. So what you see is just truth. Absolutely. There is nothing that's manufactured about it. It is just truth. And I think that's what I like about it as well. Because sometimes things doesn't, you know, things don't go according to plan. Absolutely. The dog pees on the carpet. Yeah. Or you're there, you're in the room with the dog, teaching the dog. And you're like, oh, my God, this is just not going. Yeah. This is not working. Or, you know. So it's a truthful process.
Yeah. And there were several cases or several instances where, you know, the dynamics was one trainer would work with the humans, one trainer would work with the dog. And there were some various instances where the trainer with the dog would just go, nah, this ain't working. We're going to have to rethink this because this dog is not having a bar of there. And I would say, you know, certainly several dogs. I mean, there was a dog that had separation anxiety. So you can't just take that dog off with a random person and hope that you're going to be able to fix separation anxiety in a strange environment with a whole load of weird people. It ain't going to happen. You know, that's what the challenges we were up against. So when you see the cases, the before and after effectively, that was literally what we achieved in a very, very short space of time. That wasn't, and, you know, yes, you know, good editing and production can certainly make something look different or better than what it is. But there's only so much, you know, you can't, if the dog is going to bite somebody, you know, you can edit it so much, but, you know, anybody with a half, you know, could see that that didn't work. They're actually phony. So I would say that's the thing I'm most proud of, in that every single case that we had, you know, we made massive, massive inroads in the situation, in the circumstances that we were given. I mean, look at Marvin. I mean, that border collie, you know, like the work Joe did with that dog was phenomenal. Incredible. Absolutely phenomenal. You know, like,
Marvin was a bite risk.
You know, and like, as I said, Bear, like that dog had, he was happy to bite there and then. You know, it took a lot of, like, we had to really think about how that dog was handled, and everybody was on, you know, sort of notice to say, you know, be mindful of how you move, where the camera people are, all those things. So we had that to deal with, you know, that, and I would say that made it even more impressive what we could do, because that doesn't happen. If you went to that couple's home, you wouldn't have to worry about, you know, the person over there standing, or this person, or that the camera here, or blah, blah, blah. And although it was that was done in a, you know, obviously in a different context, we still had, you know, strange environment, you know, dog had to travel up from an unknown location, stay overnight with some of the dogs, drive in a vehicle, you know, that they may never have been before. Some of them were, you know, had reactivity issues with people. Now you've got to go in the, be approached by Dan, the driver, meet Grace in the reception, And you think all of that, and then we have to take them off and work miracles with them. It's like, you know, it was a very, very, very tough set of circumstances. But I would say in every single case that we had, even if I was looking at objectively, I think that we made an impact in those people's lives with their dogs. And that to me was the goal.
What I love about it is when they contact us afterwards and they put on Instagram, you know, Lupin, for example, is like the Dalmatian is just, you know, he's a dream to walk and he had a terrible, pulled her arm arm out of the socket. Now he's a dream to walk and he's chewing less. And then you've got Bear, obviously, who had a dreadful resource guarding and mouthing. I mean, mouthing to the point where he hurt and just it was dreadful. I mean, the couple were going to split up over him almost. And just what we did at the Dog Academy set them on a different path. I mean, so many of these dogs and these people's lives have been changed, and some we can make more change than others. But I think that's what really has that's why I'm very proud of it. So people, we do have people listening to this podcast from all over the world. And so, you know, there's going to be people that are like, oh no, I want to be able to see that show. And I hope that after the series is aired, that it will be distributed to other different countries. I hope it will. But we are doing a second series and we are going to be filming that this autumn. So you're going to have to watch this space for more amazing stories. And I have to say the casting for it has exploded. Everyone watching the first series is like, I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of people applying to be on the show. So, you know, we got to be doing something right. But this is it, isn't it? There's over 10 million dogs in the UK. There's over 90 million dogs here in the US. This is needed. And good TV. I'm not talking about sensational TV where, you know, dogs are manhandled or told that they're behaving badly or, you know, that people are being rough with them. No, I'm talking about good TV that's accessible for everybody, where you can see really good, kind, humane and effective training.
And that, just on that point, so, you know, let's talk about the elephant in the room, and that what we have done on that Dog Academy is definitely a breakaway from what people have been conditioned to associate of dog training programs. And you know, that salacious, you know, crash, bang, wallop, bam, you know, something, you know, the dog savages, and then you know, and the next thing, you know, it's being petted by 25 kids. It's like, we've got to shift our thinking away from that being what dog training is. That's television. So it is created in that way to get your attention. Effective, truthful, reinforcement-based dog training that actually works and will actually solve the core issue takes time, it takes patience, and it takes commitment. And we only had a day with each of those dogs. We didn't fix the problem. What we did is we started the process to fixing the problem. Mm-hmm. We were effectively the blue touch paper, and we've just sparked the flame. Now they have to run with it and ignite that into, you know, a full on fire, so to speak. But so we need to, as a society, we need to shift our mindset away from what I call the 5-minute fix, you know, like the quick meal. We want the microwave meal. We need to shift away from that. You know, like if I offered you, you know, a microwave meal as good as what it is, that's cooked in 5 minutes, do you think that's going to taste better than a cordon bleu, you know, Michelin star meal prepared by somebody that's, you know, and that's invested time and energy?
No.
You know, there's no comparison. Absolutely no comparison. So I urge people to start shifting their mindset of going, well, do you want the microwave meal or do you want the Michelin star 5-star cordon bleu cuisine? Because I know which one I would rather eat. And I'm not saying that, and this isn't about methodologies. This is about our mindset as a culture. If we need to be thinking about, you know, if we want to have change within our dog's behavior, we have to be committed, because all relationships, whether it be two-legged or four-legged, they are about the ebbs and flows. It isn't a linear state of progression from, you know, you meet, you know, your prospective spouse, you get married, everything's wonderful, and then you die. That's not how it works. It's, you know, you meet them, you have ups and downs, you get to a point where you go, Jesus Christ, if they eat that cornflakes any louder, I'm going to shove that spoon in their face. Then you realize, oh, actually, they're not that bad. And then you go, actually, you know, and the ebbs and flows of relationships. That's what it is, honestly. And I think that we've been sold the misconception that, you know, you're a reactive dog and you, bang, you can do this. And 10 minutes later, it's walking with 30 dogs. No, that's BS. That's absolute BS. That's like saying, you know, you're, you know, in a relationship where you've had some real, real deep rooted problems, you can go to a spa weekend and it's all going to be fixed. It's all going to be wonderful. No, that's not reality. You need to strip away the stuff. You need to dig out the infection and the problem, and you need to heal from the base upwards. That takes time, and it takes work, and it takes commitment. And I would say the interesting thing, or the thing about the Dog Academy, is it shows that in its most truest sense. It shows the beginning of people going, oh, I need to be invested. Oh, I get it. And it's not to say that they weren't. It's to go, okay, now I'm invested. Oh, I am invested in the fact that I'm at the Dog Academy. What do I do to actually make long-lasting change? Okay, it's going to take a mindset shift. It's going to take adjustments in your behavior. It's going to take commitment. It's going to take, you know, some discipline on your part of going, right, I've got to get up and I've got to put the work in. And it takes, above and all, investment in the relationship, which I think every single one of those people definitely had. What they didn't have was necessarily the tools or the information to be able to execute that. And also the biggest thing was, let's look at it from the dog's perspective. Let's look at what this dog is doing and why. Why is your dog resource guarding? Why is your dog pulling you incessantly on the lead? Why is your dog barking at other dogs? Because they're doing the best they can with the information they have, with the environments that we put them in. And I think that's something that we all really need to be really, really, that's to me what the Dog Academy was about.
Kamal, you are, as I said, a light in this industry. I am so honored and pleased and enriched knowing you, and I cannot wait to start filming the second season. I am really excited because, definitely, you know, even though I'm an old croc in this profession and I've been around a long time, I'm still learning, and I learn a lot from you. I learn a lot from Sean and Joe and Adam and Nancy, and so I'm excited to continue exploring. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And yeah, please, no, if you've got more to say, I want to hear it.
I was just going to say on that point, you know, to say, you know, big shout out to you, Vic, because even looking at your evolution as a trainer from when you first started, you know, when It's Me or the Dog first come out, you have evolved your training, your mindset, your approach, you know, and you know, funny enough, somebody, I think, you know, shared a clip of you, I don't know, must have been 20 years ago doing a dog. And it's like, that's not the Vic that trains now. So for me, that's a testament to your commitment to what we do. It's a commitment to this industry and the willingness to discard what you did to be better at what you do. To me, that for somebody in your position, you know, deserves your flowers. So I have the utmost respect for you for being willing to embrace change, because I think even you would say there's things in the past that you go, what the hell was I talking about? You know, what on earth? And I know I definitely did that. I'm like, what on earth was I doing suggesting that approach to that problem? But as I said, when you know better, you do better. The difference for me is I didn't have a camera in front of it and being, you know, aired to millions and millions of people. So I have the utmost respect for you for being willing to change. And also, and I have to say, for bearing the brunt of a lot of change, like, you know, the change in reinforcement to reinforcement-based dog training from other approaches, you've been very public about, you're obviously in the media's eye, and you've, you know, taken a lot of flack, shall we say, because of it. And you've always handled it with an immense amount of class, Vic. And I don't know whether that's ever been recognized. You know, you've always been classy. You've always had your held up high. I know underneath that very sweet, polished exterior, there's a tough cookie underneath there. But you're human at the end of the day. So being able to wear it so well and so gracefully, I have to say, you know, in the snippet that I've experienced that sort of stuff, I have the utmost respect for you for doing it so well and so beautifully and so long. So, you know, whilst we can, I think it's healthy to have difference of opinions, healthy to agree to disagree on anything and say, oh, no, I wouldn't do it like that. That's the beauty of having a team, because we've got different mindsets of looking at the same problem and go, actually, I think that would be a better take on it. That to me is joyous. But the fact that you've been in this industry so well and so public and so prominent and handled some of the things with such grace, I think deserves acknowledgement.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, Kamal, because yeah, it definitely has been, it's definitely been a journey. And, you know, when I started It's Me or the Dog, I'd been a trainer for about 7 years, eight years. But, and I was doing what I'd been taught, right? Mm. What my mentors had taught me, what I'd learned about the people that I'd followed. Yep. And, I didn't use check chains or anything like that, but I certainly had that whole pack leader theory and believed all of that and rank and would do sound aversion by bashing pan lids together and things like that. And, you know, I sort of look at that now and go, well, yeah, I mean, you know, looking at it now, I go, gosh, darn it, I wish a camera wasn't in front of me. But I do think it does show the evolution. It really does. Absolutely. And that's what a lot of us used to do in those days. Yeah. But I think the mark of a good trainer is one that, and I tell this to all my students, is one that is always learning and that's always open to evolving with the times.
Definitely, definitely. Absolutely. I mean, definitely. If there's nothing you take from this podcast, be willing to embrace people with opposing thoughts, peaceful people with opposing opinions, people with opposing perspectives, and be open to the discussion. You don't have to change who you are, your belief system, because I know I can remember adamantly saying, oh, that clicker training stuff's a load of rubbish. I wouldn't be doing any of that. Fast track now, I travel the world telling people how to clicker train dogs. You go like, so, you know, I've learned the hard way not to be too hemmed on your soapbox. Be ready to get off it because there might be another perspective that's different and better. But, you know, as always, I love our discussions. Really. They always go off on a tangent really on these. It's always a pleasure.
I love it. I love it. If people want to find out more about you, where do they go?
So you can check out my Facebook page, Kamal Fernandez Dog Training, or Instagram on the same thing, Kamal Fernandez Dog Training, or go to my website, kamalfernandez.co.uk, to find out some of the stuff. And obviously, the Dog Academy, which is airing every Thursday, 8 p.m. for the next, I think there's two more episodes left of this series. And then
this recording, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Vic is, as she said earlier, we're about to start shooting another season, and that'll be out in 2024. So really, really excited about what's happening in the next 6 months or so.
You bet you. Well, thank you so much, Kamal, for joining us. And that's it, folks. That's another wonderful podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I will see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to Victoria Stillwell's Positively Podcast. For Victoria's online dog training courses, more information, and helpful dog training tips, visit Victoria's official website at positively.com. Get connected on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media as Victoria Stillwell, and follow her on Twitter at Victoria S. Learn to become a professional dog trainer with the Victoria Stillwell Academy at vsdogtrainingacademy.com. And be sure to tune in next time as Victoria helps you and your dog live your best life together. Positively.